the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to yet another edition of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, all part of the CBP Media Network. And today we'll be finishing off a home and home series. No, it's not going to be NHL 94. No, this is the High Hash Rate podcast. I have been on their show not too long ago. Check that out if you haven't already done so. And this time we're going to be inviting those two gents, Dan and Mike, over to talk about, well, Bitcoin and other related things. But for this show, you may notice we may start off a little bit tense, but we'll mellow out through the show. I'm not going to say why that's the case. And I encourage you, if you do have one, spark one up. This is the show we rely on you doing so, because you know what? It's the High Hash Rate boys coming on the show. But anyways, let's talk about the sponsors. I got a couple of sponsors I want to talk about. Number one, we have EasyDNS. And well, if you want to buy a domain name, you could do so. Purchases, renewals, they got you covered. DNS hosting, got that too. Web hosting and email host. I'm going to talk to the High Hash Rate guys to see if they could switch over to EasyDNS, because they have an unruggable, is that a word? I'm going to use that. The unruggable product, because privacy and security, that's the name of the game with EasyDNS. They've been in this game for decades. And I can say that plural because they've been in it since the late 90s. So many other companies that do the same type of service has come and gone, but EasyDNS has been here and they stood the test of time. Why? Because they provide a good product, quality product. They offer service. It's number one at the protection in mind. It's great these days. And also, you know, phishing attacks, they protect against that. They offer so many protections. DomainSure, they enable that. They're able to take down real time if there's some sort of anomaly going on, and they could just nail these guys to the cross. So your website will remain up and running. So if you want to migrate your emails, you want to migrate your website over to them, they'll do that. They'll hold your hand through the process, make this a reality. They helped us at the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, CanadianBitcoiners.com, have our own website. Thank you very much, EasyDNS, for doing that. These guys are reliable. There's no downtime. Check them out. And if you use our promo code CBPMedia, you get 50% off your initial purchase. And sponsor number two, we have Bull Bitcoin. And look, the price of Bitcoin behind me, $62,500. People are considering selling. Your choice if you want to. A lot of people are considering buying. Yes, good time to buy. Not financial advice, of course. Bull Bitcoin has you covered. So with not only if you're going to buy your Bitcoin, you can buy on-chain and through Lightning. So fees are slowly creeping up. And well, you could use other options besides on-chain. So Lightning is an option available, all thanks to Bull Bitcoin. And if you want to pay your bills with your Bitcoin, Bull Bitcoin has you covered. And if you want to buy gift cards with your Bitcoin, you can spend it in the real world, like live on the Bitcoin standard, just the way Satoshi wanted you to do. Again, Bull Bitcoin has you covered. And that's actually a decent option if you want to do so, considering the price of Bitcoin. You'd be trading in your Bitcoin for, well, a gift card that's going to be denominated in Canadian dollars, and you could spend that in the real world. But the best thing they have is the KYC-free Bitcoin. We talk about this all the time, how good it is to have KYC-free Bitcoin. It makes sense to do so. And Bull Bitcoin has you covered. You go to Canada Post, load up, go there and load up with your Canadian dollars, and your Bull Bitcoin account is then loaded up to buy Bitcoin, KYC-free. No questions asked. Simple, easy. The spread is the cheapest in the game, at least here in Canada. I can't say for the rest of the world. Anyways, check them out. If you haven't already opened up an account, I suggest do so. Use our promo code, and you're going to be having $21 added to your account once you fund your account. Okay, boys, let's bring them in. Let's do it. We got Mike and Dan from the High Hash Rate podcast. Gentlemen, how are you?
Bullish. Very bullish.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for having us on. Good.
Yeah, thank you, Len.
I wish I had a Labatt Blue to celebrate, but it's harder to get those in this part of the Midwest. But where I grew up in Michigan, man, Labatt Blue everywhere. My favorite.
If I had known, I could have airmailed that over to you.
Let you know.
Yeah, we should have. You know what? This is on me, boys. I'm sorry about that. Anyways, yeah, thanks for coming on. I was on your show not too long ago, so this is a good home and home series. Hopefully, I'm able to provide the same type of hospitality that you provided me when I was on your show. So thank you for inviting me. But gentlemen, I want to introduce you to our vast audience, the millions and millions of people listening to us. Who the heck are you guys? Tell us about your journey. Who are you? How you got into Bitcoin? And maybe how you started the High Hash Rate podcast. throw it over to you, Mike. I'll give you the chance to start talking.
Ooh, first. Dan and I spoke before. He's like, who answers the question?
Mike,
first?
Yeah, I'll take this. Mike's
Dan goes already first. Throw curveball.
Always throw it to Dan first.
We'll get into this while we're doing that. But my name's Dan, obviously co-host, High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm also the engineering manager for Swan for the mobile app. I grew up in Michigan. I got into Bitcoin. Well, I kind of got into it in like 2018 after the big bust in 2017. I was like, well, this was $20,000 a few weeks ago. I'll get some. It'll eventually go back up. But I didn't really care that much about it. I bought it through like my insurance web portal. They had like a Coinbase widget. So I had some Bitcoin on there. But fast forward to 2020, right after they announced the I can't remember the name of it, but it was the stimulus package and the stimulus checks, trillions of dollars. The Fed was just going to print like crazy. I knew exactly what I needed to do. So I went and I figured out how to get some Bitcoin and start stacking regularly. And then a few months from there, I was deep down the rabbit hole. But I started working at Swan in late 2021, and I went to El Salvador to work for a month because I was working remote. That's where I met Mike, who was down there for a totally, you know, he was down there for work, but we weren't on the same assignment or anything like that. But we ended up hanging out, and we were sitting by the beach one night smoking some what we call beach weed. And we just started having like these in-depth, like super intense, but really fun Bitcoin conversations, just kind of going into our different theories. And Mike being Mike, he's like, dude, we got to do a podcast or spaces or something. And I was super hesitant to do that, but he eventually talked me into it, and we came up with the name High Hash Rate. And luckily it wasn't taken already. So I thought that was a pretty great name, and he kind of talked me into it. So we launched it in April of 2022. We recorded about 85, 90 episodes. Wow, and it's going great, right. But it's fun. But the reason I go first is Mike's by trade. He's like a production guy. Like he records. He's never in front of the camera. He's always behind it. And he's a slick talker. He's a smart dude, super creative. But as soon as you hit action or you play, and he's in front of the camera, he gets stage fright. But he usually warms up.
Oh, it's time to mellow out. You know what? We got some inside knowledge here, saying that you've had a lucrative rollerblading career that you retired from. So is this true or not?
This is Boomer. Boomer brought this up, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah, I just want to, right. You know, is he throwing shit out here? Is this true, or what's the story behind this?
I may or not have been a rollerblading derby king.
Oh,
but I'm not going to admit to that. No, I grew up Southern California. I'm a filmmaker, and I was in the Air Force for a period of time, and I've done all sorts of odd jobs throughout my life, and the rollerblading thing, all my friends, you know, in Southern California, they were all skateboarders. We all started rollerblading, and then skateboarding, you know, came to fruition, and everyone started skateboarding, and then I got stuck with the, you know, still rollerblading, and I sort of got made fun of to a degree that I had to stop. So that's my rollerblading story. But I did get quite good. I knew how to do backwards skating. So there you go. But I'd say that you missed a key component, Dan, of the El Salvador story, I think, is when we were out there. I was there for a completely different reason. As Dan says, I was actually filming the first episode of Hard Money with Natalie Brunel. And we were trying to get this whole thing off the ground for Swan. And I'm, by the way, I'm the head of production at Swan. So that's where I fit in. So we were out there filming. And as Dan said, we met up, but there was a group of us, and all of us were sort of getting high and, you know, talking about Bitcoin, talking about greater life and everything like that. And I sort of reached out to the entire group, and I was like, you know, who wants to start a podcast with me? Let's just do it. And Dan was the only one who was brave enough to just like roll with it. And till then, we keep on riffing. We keep on talking, and even offline, we're sort of showing each other things and sharing memes with each other. And so it's been a very, very good 2 years for me in terms of the show, and enjoying it quite a bit.
Mike does all the work for the show. Mike does all the work for the show. So I'm enjoying it.
Well, no, that's not true. Dan does all the social for the show. He does all the memeing, all the background funniness.
But that too is work. It's good that you guys fit together. Just like Joey and I, and I've said this many times, it's so heavy, where my strengths end, and trust me, they end really early. His begin, and where his end, which don't they go on and on. Mine fill in the gap for him, so it works out well for us. It looks like for you two, that is the exact same. So, were you just curious when you guys were in El Salvador? Was that after they adopted Bitcoin? I think it was September 2021. I could be
So I was at the Miami Bitcoin conference when Bukele made like the announcement, when Jack Mahler's kind of like teed him up for it. And I think it actually went legal tender, like you said, in September 21.
It was the day after Labor Day, I believe.
Yeah. And the price, I think, dumped pretty soon after that. And then we had that run up again, right, to the top in
November.
In November. And then it was the bear market kind of started from there. But I went out for like a month in February. So it was February 2022. So it was a few months after the legal tender law. And I went back for a few weeks to adopting Bitcoin conference later that the end of 2022, like right after the FTX implosion and everything. So I haven't been there since then, but even in the, you know, it was maybe 9 or 10 months between February and November of 2022, El Zante, like all the places I visited, you could see noticeable development, progress, growth. Like it is booming down there. And I haven't been since, but I looked at some prices just on hotels, you know, restaurants and things like that in the area, see how they've changed, and they've tripled. So inflation is hitting the tourist areas there in terms of, you know, as a product of demand and everything like that. But it seems to be going great.
What's the vibe like over there since after they adopted Bitcoin? Because I'll be honest here, and it's a running joke that I don't leave the basement. So clearly I've never been to El Salvador, but I'm curious to know, how are the locals over there accepting it? And you have a different perspective than say somebody else. So I'd like to hear your thoughts.
And Mike can attest to what his experience was, but it like in San Salvador, the capital, I don't think I saw any business that accepted Bitcoin other than like a few of like the major chains like McDonald's, Starbucks that were kind of strong armed, so to speak, into doing it by the government. In the smaller towns, El Tunco, El Zante, which is Bitcoin Beach, of obviously like almost everybody in Bitcoin Beach, almost all the proprietors, everything accept it. Not all of them prefer it. Some of them do, if they have credit card terminals, will ask like, can you pay with a card? But some of the restaurants, little and other places there, they'll even have like discounts for your dinner or whatever on the weekends or something special for people that pay with Bitcoin. But like I said, in 2022, outside of those you know, areas you've heard about a lot and like where Bitcoin Beach like began, I wouldn't say it's very highly adopted. Maybe that's changed, but yeah, I mean, definitely isn't.
What do you, Mike? I had a
similar experience to Dan. We were mainly out at El Zante, and I wasn't there for nearly as much time. But our whole reason for being there was to cover the fact that El Salvador had recently adopted Bitcoin, and so we were going up to merchants and asking them, you know, do you accept Bitcoin? And everyone in Bitcoin Beach, pretty much everyone in Bitcoin Beach was accepting it. One thing I did notice about that little caveat was that I couldn't gauge whether, I mean, I don't speak Spanish, so, but I couldn't gauge by what we were shooting that they really understood what they had adopted or what they were accepting. So that's one thing that I did notice. But we had a little bit of coverage in San Salvador, and in San Salvador, we spoke to many, many merchants in the market, and we could only find literally one merchant that accepted it. So that's probably changed since then. But no, I didn't see much adoption.
But
No,
I was just gonna say that's, you know, that's kind of the narrative or the story you'll hear is like the low adoption rate. But I think if I had to spin it, it would be, you know, nobody's forced to use Bitcoin down there. They'll find it like everywhere else on their own if they're looking for it. And but if they do, they have the opportunity to use it a lot of places, you know, relatively speaking, compared to just out anywhere else, especially if you're in Bitcoin Beach. But and like Mike said, I'm not quite sure that everybody totally understood what they had or what this tech or how it worked or, you know, how to properly use it. But one aspect that is also true is when you get outside the major cities, there's no access to banking. There's no bank that I saw in El Zante. Mm-hmm. It's not, if you ever have been to El Zante, you would know what I mean. Like there's no banks there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where they'd even put one, but everybody there, even the people who are quite poor, like they don't even have walls necessarily on the structure that they live under, but they all have smartphones. They all have data, service. There's lots of Wi-Fi there. I never had a problem with Wi-Fi down there. So if you have that, you can use Bitcoin. So like they can pay for pupusas at the side of the road, or they can, you know, get a drink or a coconut from the guy chopping coconuts with a machete. That's mm-hmm. his whole business. And you know, if they have a phone, they could scan a QR code. Mama Rosa, the pupusa lady in Bitcoin Beach, she was like famously the first person to adopt it in that area. You know, I met her and we really couldn't speak that much. Her son was translating for me. And she was proud. She showed me this big cooler, this big freezer and a car that she had bought with the Bitcoin that, when it mooned in like 2020, cause I think she started buying in 17, 18, something like that. She made a lot. She had huge gains and it benefited her. So she just had a big smile on her face when I brought up Bitcoin, because it did definitely benefit her, at least in that aspect.
And the fact that even if they didn't understand or they don't understand what it is that they have, they are getting, you know, an amazing amount of traction. As you said, like prices have tripled and there are a lot of tourists going to that area, and you can see it. It's very clear.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And the best way to, in my opinion, the best way to learn about Bitcoin is to use it. So if they're using it, they'll, you know, presumably keep learning.
Yeah. Well, the template that they have over there hopefully can be copied in other sovereign nations, that you can see that it's sort of working in El Salvador. Certainly it's not a disaster. If anything, you could have a neutral or a positive opinion of their adoption of Bitcoin. But in terms of your travels here, I don't want to make it all about El Salvador. I want to talk about other things, but I just want to touch upon one other thing. I'm assuming you guys been to mostly like touristy areas. Maybe you didn't, but I'd like to hear your thoughts about the general safety over there, because in the past, it's noted that it was a relatively tough country to live in, and I guess even to visit. But since Bukele came in power and he's basically cleaned up all the gang activity over there, it seems that it's much easier to travel, to even through night. You're not going to be mugged or worse. So what was your thoughts? Like, give me your takeaway from the safety and security that El Salvador provides.
Yeah, I've spent mostly time in San Salvador, El Tuco, El Zante, and like a few other areas that I don't necessarily remember, like the city names or the villages, because we were kind of going to do a hike or go check out a volcano. But at no point in my, I think I've probably been there a total of 6 weeks, did I ever feel unsafe. When I flew down there the first time, there was some anxiety about it, but I got there, it was fine. You know, we get to Bitcoin Beach, there was a lot of tourists there. We're not Bitcoiners at all, had nothing to do with Bitcoin, but it's a surfing town or a surfing village. So they get tourists from Europe and in Canada, were a lot of them. And there was just, you know, a lot of girls in their early to mid 20s just walking around all day, you know, alone, you know, in bikinis. That there was like, they didn't sense a danger. There was no petty crime. There was no violent crime. And then
were they locals or were they tourists?
No, these were tourists. These were like European, Canadian, Australian surfers. And in the city, I mean, San Salvador is a relatively large city, the capital. So I'm sure there's parts of San Salvador, especially in 2022, that would have been a problem if I got lost. But in the areas I was at, I never sensed any danger, and I was on alert for it too. I was pretty paranoid the first time.
For me, I had no idea that El Salvador had any kind of history of gang violence, or, you know, was known for this murder capital. I just kind of went there. I didn't even understand until later. But so I didn't, and I definitely didn't feel unsafe while I was there. I felt like I had, I just been in another country. That I did a little bit of traveling in the Air Force. So I went to a few countries, and especially like something like Thailand, like it felt kind of in that nature. Just everyone moving all the time on the streets, just a lot of action and activity. There was a moment in the center square. We went the last day, and one of the guides we were with said, don't go in that area because, you know, there's some possible, you know, mugging that will happen or some unsafe things. But that's the only moment I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be, because I was like shooting in an area I shouldn't have been shooting in. So
filming, you mean?
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was filming. But you know, your question makes me think of a contrast. Because I did a documentary, I was filming a documentary in Kenya, and during that time, I think it was
Nairobi.
It might have been Nairobi, yeah. But we were into sort of the back areas of Nairobi, and at pretty much every moment, it's like we're driving just in a van, and you have to lock your doors, obviously, and roll up your windows because there's little kids and people on the, just following your van at a very slow pace because you're in this one road traffic. And so tourists get jacked from all the time. Mm-hmm. And so they'd say, roll up your windows, because they'll just like reach in and grab whatever they can. I guess in countries that have, you know, poverty levels like that, that's a common practice.
Now, one thing, I guess I want to transition to a different topic, because a lot of people are excited today. What's happened in the past week or so, actually, I'll say, with respect to the price of Bitcoin. And I'm going to give you, like, just very briefly my opinion. I'll be very, very brief at that. But I'm looking at this. It seems like it's a ho-hum experience for the most part. There's a lot of celebration, but we hit 60K and we're still probably above 60K. My block clock
61,600.
Yeah. In terms of like the fanfare and all the hoopla that comes along with it, it seems like it's there, but it's just like another day, right? I want to hear your thoughts about this recent price jump. Like, are there any negatives you could take away from this, or any, like, was it all positives? I want to hear your thoughts about it.
Well, I love the 58K gang in those memes. I was a little disappointed that I woke up late last night. I woke up late last night and looked at my phone and saw we were there for. We were actually there when I opened my phone and checked Twitter and saw that people who were up were going kind of bonkers. Unfortunately, we passed that pretty quickly. I'm sure we will spend some more time at 58K before it's all said and done. So if you're waiting for that, I wouldn't worry too much.
NFA, by the way, NFA.
Yeah.
Just in case anybody's going to be betting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, sorry.
This is all just like our thoughts. We have no idea what the fuck is going to happen in reality. But just
right, right. But no, it's, I mean, it's been a 20% rise in the past day or two. It more this week, even more in the past 2 weeks. So I think right now everybody's just kind of riding the euphoric high of, you know, watching their net worth go up as quickly as it's going up. It kind of heals all the animosity towards each other online. There's a lot less toxicity online. And so far, they're really, I mean, you don't hear almost anything about crypto shit coins like that. That activity has been pretty mute. I'm sure that is, you know, coming, you know, down the road, and we'll have to deal with that again. But it seems like everything is rose, smells like roses right now. So I'm sure we'll have a big dip. I don't know. Something's going to happen. This is unsustainable euphoric levels. But maybe it'll keep going. I don't know. It's in terms of what is bad. I guess the only thing I can think of right now is that sats are not cheap. So stacking, I'm getting way fewer Bitcoin for each purchase. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember being in this place. Was it 2021 that we were here? 2020?
61K, you mean?
It's 61, 62K. Yeah.
We did it twice, yeah. in March 2021 and November 2021.
So I remember just checking my phone constantly and just texting people and getting texts and I'm like, that's not going to stop. Like, oh my God, I can't, this is amazing. I'm so fucking rich. You know? And now that it's happened again and you've been through that, because that really was my first bear cycle that I've ever really been through. You know, I got in at 2017, but I didn't understand what it was. And I was shitcoining until 2020. And so now you just don't care that much. I mean, you just see that it's really cool, but I understand the ho-hum of it because a lot of us have been here already. A lot of us have felt this already.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm at. Yeah.
No, I think everybody's kind of expecting this. Like, why isn't retail aping in? Like, why isn't there more chatter about this? Well, first of all, we haven't passed the all-time high yet. I remember when, when I first started really buying and going down the rabbit hole in 2020, like it was still, you know, quite a bit under 10,000. And then we blew past 13,000, which had been this resistance level for a long time. And it wasn't long before we were back at the, you know, at that point, the previous 2017 all-time high. But it wasn't, I mean, there was like chatter like there is now to a lesser extent, but it didn't really get crazy until we were like almost double the previous all-time high. Like that's not, you didn't have Wall Street Bets and like all the GameStop people and all the crazy degens and all the DeFi shitcoiners coming in until, you know, it was like spring of 2021. Like we had quite a bit of a euphoric little bull market there before everything got bigger. So I think people are a little bit premature on expecting the rest of the world to kind of go crazy. Although I would say that looking at these volumes and inflows from the ETFs, that it's starting. But I did come up with maybe something, not necessarily a negative, but something to be hesitant about. Hmm. Everybody talks about the God candle, right? And we're wondering, when's the God candle coming? It depends on how you define it, but we had one in 2021. It was the morning I remember waking up and Elon Musk had basically said Tesla's going to buy Bitcoin, and it went up. If it wasn't 10%, it was just a hair under 10%. We were in the 40s, and everybody was like just going crazy. But the whoever or whatever is the catalyst for the God candle has a lot of power, right? And it wasn't 2 months later in May when a single tweet by Elon Musk saying like Tesla's not going to accept Bitcoin due to the environmental concerns, and Bitcoin just started dumping off of that. And then the Chinese, you know, miner ban came right after it. But whatever happens, whether it's these ETFs, and honestly, I'm willing to predict that whether it's a God candle or just like this secular bull trend that just rages for a while, it will be because of these ETFs. But it's a double-edged sword, or, you know, so what goes up, if something happens in the markets and people just start putting billions, you know, the market aggregate puts billions of sell orders in, it'll drive it right down just as quick potentially. So that's what I would say would be the thing to watch.
And something I'm looking at, a negative with all this, I mean, I should have mentioned it too, but I forgot what happened with Coinbase today. And for people who aren't aware, Bitcoin was ripping. It got to around 64, where the fuck it ended up at as the daily high. But then Coinbase, it went offline. They said
and that Fidelity crashed too.
Fidelity as well. Okay. So the price dropped significantly quickly. It was a 4K drop in like 20 minutes. My numbers could be off, but it was around there. So I'm looking at that. Some people are posting on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it these days, that the volume that was being experienced by Coinbase, is it any different than the volume it experienced back? I remember in April of 2021, the volume was incredibly high. It seemed to be lower this time around than that.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know this for sure. So I guess I should preface that this is somewhat speculation, but when you have these kind of these events where the volume starts to spike and it happens pretty rapidly, Coinbase doesn't have all of these, the server capacity and the load capacity, like constantly running in the background. Like if they have like periods, especially like we just coming out of a bear market of really low volume, like their horizontal scaling, as you would call it, they're going to scale that down. They're not going to have all this compute resource running. It's because it gets expensive. So they can scale that up And there's a lot of like automated processes that'll scale that up in the background as necessary as the volume comes in. But I think I read a tweet, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing what I remember from earlier today, so don't quote me on this, but it's like, I think Brian Armstrong said something about they upped their potential capacity this week by like 10x, and it still wasn't enough. So they just weren't anticipating this surge. And if it happened really quickly, the server resources, probably AWS or something, just probably couldn't scale up to meet the demand in time. So it caused problems, I would guess. I wouldn't think that it's, or if this volume at this rate keeps increasing and holds steady, I wouldn't expect that they would have these issues constantly going forward, but we'll find out.
It just seems rather like strange. Sorry, Mike, you wanted to say something?
No, I was just going to say delete Coinbase. There you go. Delete Coinbase.
Agreed.
Swan didn't go down, yeah.
there you go. So a plug for Swan for their ability to weather this incredible volume. And yeah, I'm looking at that, and what happened with Coinbase, it just seems, at the very least odd. And I'm not saying that there was any hanky-panky going on behind the scenes, but just whatever happened, and we're all looking at Coinbase saying, what the fuck did you do? What happened here? But anyways, is it, in your guys' eyes, I would imagine a lot of this is ETF-driven. Do you agree? And if so, any negativity do you think that's surrounding that?
Oh, I mean, I think we talked about this a little bit on our show with you. I mean, it's obviously great for a number go up, but this is, countless customers, billions of dollars of Bitcoin being purchased that is custodied by Coinbase via BlackRock, Fidelity, Bitwise, WisdomTree. It's not being custodied by Bitcoiners who holding their own keys. The further away you get from the base layer, the less you understand, the less you are sovereign. So, I mean, some people do not care about that. They don't care about the sovereignty. They care about number go up. They care about fiat gains. If they ask my opinion, I'll tell them that I think that they're misguided and they should consider the self-custody and that self-sovereignty a little bit more. But, it's up to them at the end of the day. So at some point they may come to realize the error of their ways and why they shouldn't have used the ETF. It won't be the same, but GBTC, before it converted, those people learned the hard way, and they're still feeling the effects of it now. So that's the negative. It's not self-custody. It's Wall Street custody.
100%.
Yeah, I tend to agree 100% with that. I do think that the price sort of going up like a rocket is obviously a positive thing, and the ETFs being a big part of that. So just to get people interested, or just to get people looking at this and realizing that they need to educate themselves, I think that in and of itself is a positive thing. I mean, I hope that this thing is, for the next 100 years is going to be what people are going to be using. And so we all need to get on that train. And we all know that the downfalls of fiat, and that all the work we do is getting harder and harder to do the work and maintain a standard of living that you want. And so what's really, really great, and I've been thinking about a lot recently, is the as long as this Bitcoin thing exists, it's like all you need to do is to be able to provide value to society. And no matter whenever you are born, whenever you grow up, as long as this thing exists, you'll be able to transact in a truthful and
as long as you can afford transaction fees.
That's a topic for, we could talk about that after, but yeah, you're right, Mike.
I just think it's all positive. That's what I'd say. It's all positive.
you're right, because one thing we're going to have to do individually as a society and even much more broadly is, if you can't provide value, if you fabricate it, it's not true. You have to provide true value in order to be paid for something like Bitcoin, where it's hard money. You can't create it just like you can with US dollar, Canadian dollar, whatever, name your currency. So there is an actual value. There's work associated with mining it and work associated with actually being paid in it. And you're right. So it's going to encourage people to be more, not just productive, but to provide value to society as a whole. But Dan, you mentioned the thing that I also wanted to talk about, which is the fees. You know, that's one thing that's going to happen. I think it was you, Mike, that was mentioning in a chat with us, is that the rewards moving forward after every halving gets reduced significantly, like at half, but you know, multiply this by a few halvings, then your rewards are very, very low. And so what's going to drive the miners to get paid? Well, it has to be the transaction, the mining fees. So people paying a specific fee to have a transaction added to the next block. And that's going to have to go up significantly, especially as hash rate increases. Energy costs probably will go down over time, but still, hash rate will go up. So these miners are going to have to compete, throwing more and more equipment on a system that's going to be even more hungry for electricity. So it's just feedback where they need somehow to be paid for the work that they do. And the only way they're going to get paid for is the fees. So how do you think mm-hmm. it's going to be addressed? Because
I do. I think about this, and this is just my theory. Mm-hmm. This is one of these theories that I could go down this rabbit hole forever, but at a high level, the more we get integrated with the financial system, with technology, with things like AI, where you're having kind of this constant demand globally for compute and compute resources, and almost like this, like on a, you can kind of price it on a per compute, you can price it on like a kilowatt hour of energy. And it's, you know, as Bitcoin gets more integrated, you're going to have these, you know, kind of like with Wall Street, you have these trading algorithms, these like supercomputers. They got like microwave antennas to like be faster than typical, what is it, like DSL or like even fiber. But with these AI, they'll be the ones actually transacting on chain. Like it'll be, somebody will be providing compute for this giant LLM or some other data model or some sort of like deep learning. And it'll take a lot of time, a lot of energy. And if that person is on the other side of the planet and you are creating so much compute, it's so expensive for the miner, like not the Bitcoin miners, but like these AI miners, whatever you want to call them, with the GPUs, they're not going to, you know, let somebody just have this huge bill and hope that they can bill them like a month later. And it's like, if they don't pay, it's like, well, how do I sue them? It's like not my jurisdiction. It's, they're going to demand some sort of payment. And the only thing that I think is a lot of market participants are going to want is going to be Bitcoin. You can set up payment channels. You can just have this flow of compute and sats just going back and forth, like on this, like it'll be balanced and it'll just be flowing. And like, you'll be trying to transact on chain from your laptop, you know, verifying with your own node with your Sparrow wallet. And you'll be competing with these, you know, deep learning machines who are just like, they're managing their UTXOs so superbly, like they're so efficient with it. They're so efficient with how they broadcast a transaction, which blocks they're trying to get it in, like based on the fees, based on patterns. And you're just like, I just want to transact. I just want to send this, you know, I want to consolidate my UTXOs. And these machines are like thinking, it's almost like chess. Like they're thinking days ahead, blocks ahead, where they're going to, like what kind of wallet or spend script they're going to use. And you're just, it's going to be very hard to compete with that. So I don't think it's going to be a problem. Basically, to sum up, I don't think it's going to be a problem with the miners getting paid. I think it's going to be a problem with humans being able to keep up with the efficiency of machines in actually getting to spend or to transact themselves on layer one.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, does that mean that we'll even be able to do on-chain transactions in the future? Or,
well, I mean,
and if not, what does that even mean for the Lightning Network? You know,
it depends on demand. It depends on demand. A lot of people have a multi-sig, like a P2SH multi-sig. I don't think people understand, like, that's like two or three, four times just a minimum transact, one UTXO, you know, the overhead and then whatever your outputs are. That's like three or four more times more expensive than a SegWit address, a Taproot address. So if you have 10 UTXOs to consolidate at 500 sats per V byte, two outputs, you're talking $500 to $1,000 at current prices in sats fees to make that transaction, just to consolidate your UTXOs for your multi-sig wallet. At what point are people going to have to really be thoughtful about the scripts, the address types, like how they're spending? I think we're getting it could happen this cycle where like people just don't realize, they open up their ledger, their Trezor, and they're like, oh shit, like, this is too, like, I can't spend this. I can't consolidate. Like, what am I going to do? And I don't think there's enough discussion about that yet. There is discussion about being annoyed with fees, and they're annoyed with ordinals. And don't get me wrong, I have nothing like, I have no praise to put on ordinals, but it's kind of a distraction, really. Like, something is going to be to make on-chain transactions very expensive in the future, whether it's ordinals or AI or just machines in general. We have to be ready for it.
Well, that seems like there's going to be something in the market that has to address that in terms of offering, you know,
wallets.
And you can't spend it. I mean, there's got to be something that's going to come up that will,
I got ideas,
you
man.
Give us a fee and
yeah, we'll consolidate your UTXOs for you. Well, exactly. Or what we'll do is you'll have to make trade-offs. You'll have to like share either with a service or, you know, maybe they'll have an open source decentralized system or something that will analyze your UTXOs based on some settings that you put in. Say, like, if you don't care about privacy, you can consolidate down to one UTXO. If you want to have it split out between, you know, X amount of UTXOs at a minimum amount of Bitcoin per UTXO, going to new addresses, going through mixers, whatever, it'll be very customizable. And then this thing will monitor the network. And when fees are at a certain point, a low point, or like some, you know, limit that you set, like if they're under 100 sats per V byte, then it will generate this transaction for you. And you'll just get an alert on your phone, whatever. You'll go in, you'll sign it, boom, broadcast. And I think that's a start. But I don't know if that'll even be enough.
Something that's happened through all this, and you touched upon ordinals, and I don't want to talk about them too much, but the one positive we could take about the creation of this pathetic thing that they've done is that it's given us time to reflect what happens when there's going to be a high fee environment. And we've experienced relatively high fee environment in comparison to previous years. I think this is still high, but not as high as I think 2017 was the highest we've ever experienced. But anyways, we have to now figure out a way to scale Bitcoin a little bit more. And I'm wondering then, the ETFs too, I think in this respect, I'm not a fan of ETFs, but in one way, I think it's kind of helping the on-chain deal with congestion, because now you're taking that off chain and it's dealing, and it's not the best of ways to do it. There's obviously some trade-offs, but so what I'm trying to get at is, what sort of scalable solutions do you see? I mean, I'm looking at Lightning, for instance. It's good, but there are limitations within it. I mean, channel factories may get around that, but still, you know, then there's inherent trust that comes along with it. People look at other things, like, I dare say, I don't like talking about it much, but Liquid. But like, in terms of scalable solutions, what do you think is going to be coming out that's going to help just ease the stress of on-chain fees?
Yeah, I've been open about this. At the end of the day, obviously, I would recommend and prefer to you use Bitcoin peer-to-peer, you verify with your own node, you self-custody, you don't use custodial solutions. However, at a certain point, you have to make the decision, is sovereignty and privacy worth $40 or $50, you know, in sats terms or in dollar terms, for a $5 cup of coffee? Or are you willing to get rugged for a couple of dollars worth of sats by having it on a, you know, Cash App or something else, so you can buy a coffee on your way to work. Or if your privacy and your sovereignty is that important to you, then you will pay the price, the market price, to do it. Otherwise, you have to make, you have to make the decision. There's no perfect solutions. There's no perfect answers. There's only trade-offs. So if you are, if you need to have, you know, small transactions, unfortunately, until something comes along that allows you to do this, maybe it's covenants. I don't know enough about the use case and the implementation of what's possible with covenants to know if like these virtual UTXOs will be reliable and secure enough to kind of ease a lot of this burden. But I mean, you've got eCash, these Chaumian mints, you've got Custodial Lightning, you've got a lot, Liquid, all of these other, you'll have to look at the options available to you and decide like what is more important to you, your sats, your privacy, your sovereignty, or ultimately the cheapest thing will probably, at least in the near future, will be to just use fiat. If you don't want to use fiat, you can get incrementally better until you get to sovereign on-chain peer-to-peer use. But everything, that's a spectrum. Sovereign use, using your credit card, using fiat, you got to find something in the middle that works for you until, you know, or unless fees are low, and then you can kind of, you can do whatever you want when fees are low. But that's a luxury situation. We don't necessarily have that to look forward to forever.
I can't really speak too much to, you know, what is coming up. I'm not, you know, super techie in that, right, in that regard, but I will say that I have used Lightning, and it is super convenient and super cool. And I guess that would be the solution that I would think about. But right, other than that, all the things that you're bringing up, like it, you know, there's going to be
the solution. The solution is ultimately always up to you. It's you. You're responsible for solving your own problems at the end of the day. So obviously Cash App or Wallet of Satoshi or whatever these custodial Lightning wallets are probably, in Liquid, right? They're like the least optimal ways to use, you know, share the load in terms of paying for these on-chain settlements. With these, you know, Fedimints, and, you know, we talked about Bitcoin Beach, right? Like the Galoy, the Bitcoin Beach wallet, now called Blink. It is custodial, but it is custodial in the sense that the keys, it's almost like a small little federation of people in that community. You can have these like Fedimints or like these little Lightning solutions with people at your church, at your trade labor union, at your Brazilian jiu-jitsu gym. What a small community of people that you don't necessarily trust 100%. You shouldn't trust anybody 100%, but you understand them, their incentives, and you have this like reliance on each other. So you can limit the risk, limit the ruggability by building local community solutions, circular economies. Like people are going to have to start, I think, thinking that way and kind of like enabling and empowering their families, their communities with Bitcoin technology to share the load, to share the UTXOs, unless or until we have a better solution than that.
Dan, are you orange pilling dudes that you're rolling with during your Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes? Like while you're rolling with?
Yeah, when you're clenched into
There's a few. There's a few people that are open to it. Walking. I would, in the Midwest, I don't know if this is how this is everywhere, but in the Midwest, the kind of people that go to jiu-jitsu gyms, they are in their Dave Ramsey era, to put it in Taylor Swift terms, right? Like these guys love, they're there because they're getting healthy, they're getting fit, they're learning a martial art, and they're getting their finances in order. They're always talking about Dave Ramsey. And I, sometimes I have to remember, like, I'm not on Twitter anymore. I'm like around regular people who I have to see face to face, and some of them can kick my ass. So I don't want to like clown on them too hard, but yeah, they love Dave Ramsey.
I just wanted to just transition really quick because, geez, we're already at this for 50 minutes. I just wanted to pick your brain quickly about What happened recently is the Department of Energy, I forget which subsection of that department, they were asking miners to voluntarily disclose information related to the amount of energy that they use.
Voluntold, yeah.
In one case, it was voluntold. Yeah, I want to hear your thoughts about this because you're closer than it is than I am. Again, I'm a Canadian in the basement here just outside of Toronto. So my perspective is a little bit different and maybe your perspective because at least you guys living in it. This is your jurisdiction. The people that you voted for, or maybe you voted for, are doing this. I want to hear your thoughts about it.
So I've been following it relatively closely. I didn't read like the literal injunction or whatever that came out, but it sounds, from what I understand, Riot sued. That basically this was unconstitutional, like they were being harassed by the federal government. And so it was like I don't even think a judge stopped it. I think the Department of Energy was like, all right, never mind. We'll settle this later. You don't have to send us your energy requirements. But so hopefully Riot wins that one just by standing up to the bully and saying, screw off. And they're like, all right, we'll screw off. But unlikely in the long term. So I think that, I mean, obviously nobody wants this type of thing to happen where like the government is coming in, tell us exactly how much energy and electricity you're using. I think ultimately that will become like transparent common knowledge, kind of like we've got the blockchain. I think they'll be able to start to figure out how much energy people are using. But for the time being, it's just the federal government harassing and doing what they do. However, to put it in context, it is 2024. It's an election year. So Democrats, politicians, whoever, like they've got their incentives. They're trying to get headlines. They're trying to impress certain voter demographics. There's going to be a lot of this. There's going to, especially as Bitcoin starts to rip, there's going to be politicians that are going to come out, and we've already seen this, right? Like it's free publicity. They're going to get free marketing. They're going to be rah, 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 pro Bitcoin. That's just as big of a trap, I think, as the politicians who are anti Bitcoin. So it's like just blindly following these politicians who are pro Bitcoin. And then you're going to have politicians who are, we need to regulate it. We need to shut it down. We need to ban it. We need to stop the miners. This is not good for climate, yada, yada, yada. It's just going to be this big narrative battle. But I think ultimately, at least in the short term, it's not a big threat. It's just something that they're playing their hand. They don't have as much authority or follow through as they might like to seem. And by making these big requests, making these really stupid demands, you can do that in a lot of industries and most people don't pay attention to it, but you do it in Bitcoin. And like within 5 minutes, all of social media is lit up. They're getting tons of calls. They're getting tons of letters. Mm-hmm. They got Dennis Porter knocking on their door. shout out to Dennis Porter.
It's the worst.
you
don't want Dennis Porter knocking on your door.
It's all a charade, but every time they show themselves, I think they take one step forward, two steps back, and from their perspective, like they think they're taking a step forward to regulate this or to get a hold of this, but they're really ultimately taking two steps back because I think, especially right now, there's a crisis of legitimacy and everything like that with government institutions. So the more they come out against something, the more it's just a backlash against it. Because I think the Biden administration said yesterday that mining puts this extra strain on energy grids and raises energy prices. And I just made this like really one-off stupid comment in the replies. I'm like, yeah, well, the White House also says that men can get pregnant. So what does it matter what their opinion is? And that one kind of, I think I ratioed them, but either way, it's like that's a good way to look at it. Like every time the government, I mean, it depends on what government, it depends on your political views, but this current presidential administration, they don't seem to have it together. And every time they come out and take a position and they say very definitively that this is so, you can just look at everything else that they're saying is so. And it's so ridiculous that it's like, I don't think most people are paying any attention to them anymore.
That's really, that's a great point, Dan. I think that wherever there's value, there's going to be some sort of bully sniffing that out and trying to extract their share of it. So, and we're seeing that, play out. And as you mentioned, Dan, in the industry of the Bitcoin space, I think it's so, because of what it is and how it runs, the government entities who are mainly people who have been conditioned their whole lives to, you know, be politicians and they say what they say what it is, and then they get voted in, and then they do something completely different, but they aren't doing the work. So if they're not doing the work, they're not understanding what industry that they're even trying to govern. They don't even understand how they're trying to lock it down. So because they are this ancient way of thinking, or this like old school way of thinking, you're just seeing like all of these new AI technologies and Bitcoin, all this stuff is just going to surpass them in a way that they won't even be able to, they won't be able to keep up. And
right.
And I think that I think it's just going to bring in a new revolution of thinkers and a new revolution of government and a new revolution of thought leaders. That's.
Yeah. And you mentioned this before on our high hash rate that the dollar itself is a very important symbol, and it's a symbol of the value and strength of the US government. And every time they print a new one, they debase the strength and legitimacy of each one that came before it. And they're just doing it at such a rapid pace. You see it now, like the politicians that are backing, you know, Nikki Haley against Trump. Whether you like Nikki or you like Trump, it doesn't matter. The point is that they're spending millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to back her campaign, and she's not getting the votes. So like, it's the cost of political influence is the inflation in that is high. It's a good thing it's not in the CPI, because that would probably drive the CPI through the roof, right? Like, you look at the cities, American cities, and the crime and the issues, and like there's issues with the border, and all it's doing is demonstrating to everybody that the U.S. government and these institutions don't have the control, the grip, you know, the authority that we all kind of thought they did, that we all kind of assumed they did. And it's like, if all these things can keep happening, all this criminal activity, all this just insanity, and nobody is held accountable, nobody goes to jail, nobody gets arrested, everybody just kind of skates free. Well, everybody's going to be like, well, why am I going to follow this law or this law in my life? Like, nobody else is having to follow the law. Nobody else is being held accountable for anything. The military, the police, like, they don't seem to care. And if they did, they don't seem to be able to stop it. So, you know, and this is also happening overseas. Like, we're at war with Russia through Ukraine. And then we've got the Houthis, and we've got like these dudes wearing chancletas or whatever, or like, flip-flops, and they've got $5,000 rocket launchers, and they've shut down the one of the most important trade routes in the world. And we can't do anything about it. If we can't do anything about the Houthis, we can't do anything about like pit pockets in New York City. Like, what? And people really think they're going to stop Bitcoin. Like, come on. What do you see that makes you think they're going to stop Bitcoin? These guys cannot stop dudes in sandals with like 30-year-old or like homemade rocket launchers. They're like taking out the U.S. Navy with rocket launchers from like a mile away. I don't know, man. The government's not going to stop Bitcoin. They wouldn't know where to start.
Well said. Now,
it's too big. It's too distributed. There's too many thoughts inside of it.
If Bitcoin was as big and as strong as it was in 2011, I don't think they could stop it.
It shows you something. Back then, it was just a fraction of what it is right now. I got some rapid fire questions. It's probably gonna take 5-10 minutes, but I know Mike, you're under the clock. Do you want to stick around for that, or you want it to bail for this segment? It's up to you.
No, all good. All good.
All right, so I'm going to just throw you guys some rapid-fire questions, and I want to hear your answers. You guys are both not your keys, not your coin guys, right?
For sure.
So what would you rather hold then, Bitcoin ETF for 10 years or one of those moronic JPEGs for a year and hope to sell it?
Oh, man. I mean, how many sats is back in this JPEG?
The same amount that you would put it in the ETF. So the same amount of value you're putting in one versus the other. What would you rather hold? The ETF?
But it's a Bitcoin that I self custody. It's just an ordinal.
Yeah,
it's an ordinal. I still want the Bitcoin.
How about you, Mike?
I know fundamentals is gonna give me flack for this. I know it. If he hears this, but I'll probably go with the ETF just because that's something I don't even understand ordinals, to be honest. I've been explained this a million times, and I still don't understand what the hell that thing is. So I'll probably go with the ETF. Unfortunately,
fair enough. Who's the GOAT? Bubbles, Julian, or Ricky?
I got to go with Ricky. Ricky, nothing gets the guy. I mean, there's like two episodes where he was like a little bit down on his luck and he was kind of losing his mind. But I mean, the guy can be happy in jail. He can be, I wish you could, I could orange pill Sunnyvale Trailer Park, but I got to pick Ricky.
This is a Sunny in Philadelphia reference?
No, this is Trailer Park Boys. Mike doesn't watch Trailer Park Boys.
Okay, I don't watch either one of those shows, so I wouldn't know. I'm going to go with Ricky. That there seems like a right good answer.
Who would you rather see retire first, Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren?
Joe Biden. Joe Biden has more authority. Liz Warren is a little bit more of a blowhard, but I think she's only gotten like one bill ever passed, so she's not that big of a deal.
I take the opposite stance on this because I'm just enjoying thoroughly watching Joe Biden and all of his antics. You know, I just want to keep on seeing how much ice cream this dude will eat.
Would you prefer a quiet citadel in the woods or one on a beachfront property?
I'll do the beachfront. I don't mind civilization. I like people.
Beachfront for sure.
Have you guys ever been so baked that you could not record a high hash rate podcast?
We've been so big that we shouldn't have recorded a high hash rate podcast, but we've always done it. The people want to hear their episodes once a week. We give it to them no matter what.
Hell yes. I think I had to duck out of a couple of them just because
there
was
one. There was one with, it was another Canadian. It was Plate Licking Pleb. I thought I took 10 milligrams. I took 100 and it started kicking in the show. And I'm just like, whoa. We made it through it though. It was a great conversation. I love Plate Licking Pleb.
Okay, good for you to survive. Favorite podcast not named a CBP or high hash rate?
That's a good question. I actually have to go with Shane and Matt and Shane's secret podcast, Shane Gillis. I like to listen to stand-up comics podcasts. But in terms of Bitcoin, like a Bitcoin podcast, I love Rock Paper Bitcoin. I love those guys. They're very similar, kind of in the vibe, in the theme of, we're not really talking about macro, we're not really talking about economics. We touch on some technical stuff, but it's really more of a cultural type of conversation.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say my non-Bitcoin podcast is probably a criminal podcast where I can't remember. It's like A Touch of Evil or the something of evil. I can't remember the name of it, but basically running around the story of the Black Dahlia, which it was like a series, but it was a really, really good, well done series, except for the last episode.
Yeah, Touch of Evil.
The last one, they're just like crying at the end, you know, it's like a 45 minute session of them crying. So it's not a good episode, but the whole thing is well produced, but I definitely have to agree with Dan on this one, on the Rock Paper Bitcoin podcast. Cause that one is just, they're these dudes. I mean, we love talking to them and they always bring up really, really interesting, stuff that I haven't even thought about before.
Any final words, guys, before we sign off?
Yeah, stack sats, don't sell. And the next 18 months, we may go, listen, again, not financial advice, but I mean, I don't know, maybe we'll go to 100K, maybe we won't make it past 70, maybe we'll make it to 300K. But either way, if we make it to 300K, along the way, there's probably going to be three or four like massive dips. So just, if this is your first cycle, don't freak out. Just hodl through it. You'll get like a Zen by the end of if this is your first cycle, you'll have a Zen to you.
Yeah.
I have a message for all the fathers out there, and that is stay strong, dudes. Stay strong. That's it.
Oh yeah, one last thing. Consolidate your UTXOs. We already talked about this, but it's going to be expensive. Consolidate your damn UTXOs. Bitcoin Cameron, if you're listening, my buddy, I know this dude has a ledger and he has never logs in and uses it. He just sends like DCA to it. Cameron, consolidate your UTXOs for your Cameron, daughter, bro.
Come on. Your future self is going to thank you if you do that. But gentlemen, Dan and Mike from the High Hash Rate Podcast, thanks for coming on. If you want to find out where to reach them, I have them in the show notes, their Twitter handles or X handles, whatever you want to call it, so you can reach out to them. But with that, thanks for coming on, and we'll be back at this on Monday. So with that, take care.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.